You know what you should read.
It's time for What You Should Read, the podcast all about the titles you need. Join three book lovers and a guest as they cover all the best new titles to enjoy with your tea.
I have that, but I haven't read it yet.
Hi, I'm Julia.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Kelly.
And this is What You Should Read,
the podcast where we shed all over our books.
Today we are talking to Hillary Leichter, author of the book Temporary. But first, Rachel, what are you reading?
I am reading, besides Temporary, which I love so much, I've been reading The Four Winds by Kristen Hannah. I'm not that far in. I'm about 90 pages in, and I really like it so far. The first chapter or two was a little slow for me, but that was the same with The Nightingale, and then it, like, got better steadily as you go on.
Don't worry. It's amazing. Yeah, I felt kind of the same way about the first couple chapters. I was like, well, I like the main character, but it didn't grab me the way that The Great Alone did, but it gets there for sure.
Oh. Yeah, I have no doubt. I also have been trying to think, so I finished Ask Again, Yes, which I really loved. And then I was trying to figure out what to read as my next audiobook. And then I remembered I have this book that I started in like December and then DNF'd in January, more so on a, like a, as a temporary basis. I said, I'll try to pick it up again. And I almost unhauled it in my bookshelf tour video, but I decided to keep it and try and continue to read it. So that's Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. And the audiobook was available on my library app. So I'm going to try and get back into this book.
Cool. What is that book about? I see it everywhere.
Yeah, it's like multi-perspective. It's told in like a non-traditional way, sort of in these little like paragraphs that are almost poetic in a way, kind of like dreamlike, sort of like Temporary, kind of in that style of storytelling, but it's not fantastical in any way or like unrealistic. It's just telling the lives of these women.
Cool.
Yeah. And there's like not much punctuation and like no quotation marks. So it's a bit slower
to
read. So I'm curious what the audiobook is like. We'll see.
Yeah. Awesome. Kelly, what about you? What are you reading?
I am also reading The Four Winds. I am a little bit farther in, but not too far. I am almost at the end of the second part, which is 1931, I think. So this is a part that I don't, a part of history that I really don't know much about, like the Dust Bowl. And I think going into this book, I was like, well, it sounds inconvenient, but not awful. And I'm reading this book now and I'm like, oh my God, I would die.
Yeah.
I would die.
I do feel like we weren't, I'm sure it came up in history classes, but it's not a part of history that I also knew nothing about it. And then I looked at pictures of it after reading this book and I thought, oh my gosh, literal mountains of dust. And yeah, that's why so many people left for the West Coast. And it's just really an incredible tale. And yeah. Sweeping generational saga, but I can't imagine.
It sounds like an actual literal nightmare.
Yes.
And the descriptions, and I don't want to, you know, talk about the plot, but they would say things like, you know, somebody would get out of bed and there would be like a person outline in dirt. Not because they were gross and didn't clean, but because apparently the dust was a roommate.
Right.
Yeah. That did not pay rent and never left.
Yeah. Right. Oh, man. Ugh. Well, I am reading A Blade So Black by L.L. McKinney, and I'm about 60% of the way through. I'm reading it on Kindle. Rachel got it for me for my birthday last year, so I'm finally getting to it. It's great. It's so much fun. It's funny. It's action packed. It has the retelling. It has Wonderland. It has, it's actually one thing that really hit me as I was reading it. And I can't remember when this was published. I think 2019, mm-hmm. I want to say, or maybe the year, maybe 2018, but mm-hmm. before Breonna Taylor died is when it right. was written and published. There is, and this is not central to the plot, but there's this backdrop of what's happening in Atlanta, which is where Alice, the main character, lives, of police brutality. And the there recently in the story, a young girl, her age, like 16 or 17, named Breon, is killed by police just walking home from like a game because they think she's wearing gang colors. And it's like, everyone was wearing those colors. It was a, there was a football game.
Yeah.
So it just kind of hit me. I said, oh my goodness, because this was written and published, I believe, before Breonna Taylor right. was killed. And so it just kind of was like, wow. But,
oh, sorry.
No, but I was just going to say, so there's the backdrop of that and like her mom's anxiety every time Alice disappears, which she does frequently because she has to go into Wonderland and fight monsters. Yes. And it's just, it's an element of the story that I was kind of expecting a little bit based on what I heard about the book, but it just really is hitting me and it's just so good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I don't know when it came out, but I know the sequel came out last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have to have been
right
before, which really makes it even worse because it's this awful timeless aspect. That's
just the fact always, that the name, the fact yeah. that the names are so close is what right. also. Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
well,
on that note,
I'm here to cheer you up. Oh, wait. So if you have, we'll say, older relatives or conservative people from your hometown on your Twitter lists or Facebook friends, you probably heard about this. But Dr. Seuss's estate, which is dedicated to preserving his legacy, have decided to pull 6 books out of circulation for racist depictions of various groups, I think largely but not entirely Asians. And these books, most of which no one has ever heard of or read or could pick out of a lineup, they, like I said, have racist drawings and depictions of people. And to combat this cancel culture, as of yesterday, 6 of the 10 best-selling books on Amazon are by Dr. Seuss. None of them are the books that have been canceled. Canceled. And I really can't wait for them to read their children The Lorax, because I bet they're going to hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so people are mad at...
Yes.
I don't know who. I think Joe Biden. I think yes. he is being blamed for this. He has nothing yeah. to do with this. But people are mad because they're saying we're canceling Dr. Seuss, which is not true at all. There yeah. are so many Dr. Seuss books still in circulation that are perfectly wonderful. And these 6, I've never read them. I don't know. I don't even remember which ones. I don't know when they were written, but it doesn't matter. They don't need to be around.
Right.
Oh, it was the right call to Rachel's cat is right behind her. Sorry.
Hi, Kitty.
Oh my gosh.
She looks so comfortable.
She's on a tower and she's like, everything the light touches.
Yeah.
She does. She looks like a statue.
Oh, Cat in the Hat. I mean, there we go. Cat in the Hat. It's still a good book, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the right call to pull those books. They're not relevant anymore. If they ever were. And mm-hmm. I don't know.
I know. I saw on TikTok, actually, what I thought was a really good description of what's happening is like people think that the liberals or Joe Biden are canceling things. And this person's like, no, a capitalist entity made a capitalist decision. Like this is capitalism yeah. at work. They made a decision based on like the preferences of their audiences or what they thought was the best, you know, representation of their brand.
Yeah, yeah, it was only a matter of time before this someone discovered one of these books. And I mean, I think it's been out there for a while, but it was only a matter of time before something went viral and people were like, look at this racist book by Dr. Seuss. So to be proactive and take them out of circulation, you know, of this estate, that was the right move.
Yeah.
And I mean, the entire group's purpose is to preserving his legacy. It's
right.
I think his heirs and some other people. And yeah, like you said, Rachel, it's like, it's the free market you guys love so much.
Mm-hmm.
You can't worship capitalism and then be mad when, you know, it doesn't go your racist way.
And also, Dr. Seuss himself, he expressed regret for the, you know, racist things that he drew and wrote, you know, later in life, especially a lot of the politically motivated cartoons during, you know, World War II and Japanese internment,
right,
you know, that he regretted, you know, creating a lot of that.
Yeah. So he would support this, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they're racist depictions. They're harmful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no need to have them out there.
Right.
Also, I have seen the list of books, the six they took off the market, like probably at least 10 times. I still can't remember them.
Yeah.
One of them is something like The Cat's Quizzer. These are books I guarantee most people have never even heard of.
Right, right.
That could actually be a really fun game. Throwing up on Instagram like a list of titles. It's like, which of these are actual Dr. Seuss?
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And which of these I made up because I have too much free time.
All right. Should we move on to?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to take a while. So
yeah, I know.
Do recent acquisitions today.
I mean, same.
Yeah. So, okay, our next segment is recent acquisitions, where we review all of the books that we have recently purchased or borrowed or attained in some way. So, Julia, why don't you start us off?
Okay, so I'll start with books that I have on my digital reader. So, Kelly texted me the other day, I think texted our group thread and said, this book is on sale, and it's called The Versions of Us by Laura Barnett. I had never heard of this book, but all I had to see was that it was Sliding Doors-esque, and I bought it immediately.
I mean, I text things on purpose.
Right.
It's always like, hey, I bet one or both of you will like these.
Right. So, yeah, I've never heard of it before. I don't know much about it other than there are three different timelines. For this couple, it looks like a romance or contemporary romance. So
cool.
Great. And then I was approved for an e-arc of God Spare the Girls, which Anna North recommended when we interviewed her last week. So this is God Spare the Girls by Kelsey McKinney. And it's the one about the family that is head of this mega church in the South, yeah, in Texas, I think. And so, when she talked about it, I was immediately intrigued. So mm-hmm. I'm excited that I got approved for it. Thank you to NetGalley. So I'm excited to read it and review it.
Nice.
And I also, purchased The Duke and I on audiobook, the Julia Quinn book that the Bridgerton series is based on. So I'm also reading that. I'm listening to that now. It's a really fun audiobook. And then I also, for some reason, went on a little bit of a book buying spree. I think I had put myself unintentionally on a sort of book buying ban in February. I didn't buy a ton of books. I bought a few, but nothing like normal. I don't know. I guess I went a little overboard because I ordered a ton of books, not all of which have come in yet. So we're not going to be here too much longer. But I first bought Accidentally Engaged by Farah Heron.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a rom-com, and it's a young woman who is Muslim American, and her dad sets her up, but she doesn't want to date anyone that her dad works with. And so she's resistant to it at first, I think. So that's the first one. Then I bought this book, Much Ado About You by Samantha Young. I don't know anything about this book. I saw it on Instagram and I bought it on a whim without knowing anything about it or seeing any reviews. This wasn't even a review. It was just like, hey guys, I bought this book.
Wow.
Does anyone know anything about it? I was like, nope, but I'll buy it.
Nice.
I know that's a great cover. That's all. Yeah. I know.
Then I bought In the Quick by Kate Hope Day. And it's like a young woman who's an astronaut, and there's a love story. It was compared to The Martian a little bit. So it was on my most anticipated list. Not officially on our episode, but it's on my Goodreads list. So, and then I also bought Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro, which we are reading for our book club. So everyone should read it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Those are all my books.
All right, Kelly, you're up. Try to beat that.
Oh, well, I really appreciate your lack of faith in me. And what I called on Tuesday, very expensive Tuesday.
There were so many good books released last Tuesday. Yes. I think we're getting into the like prime publishing season. So watch out, everyone.
Yes. I also got Accidentally Engaged and Clara and the Sun, both of which came out on Tuesday. I also got the new Stephen King Later, which Michael Corrida discussed. I've already read it and I loved it. I got Float Plan by Trish Dollar. She's one of my favorite YA authors, and this is her adult debut. I also read that and loved it. I am not done. I got the new Mary H.K. Choi called Yoke. It's about sisters. I don't know much else about it, but I love her books. Since Julia, you got me her debut, I think, for my birthday 1 year, and I loved it, and I loved her other books. So I don't know what it is. I don't care what it's about, really. I know I'm going to love it. I'm just basically killing time until I can get there. I got a book called Who is Maud Dixon by Alexandra Andrews, and it's about a woman who works in publishing. And she works with this author, and no one knows much about the person, Maud Dixon. And she ends up dying or maybe going missing or something. And the main character is like, well, I guess I can do this for a while. So she kind of becomes Maud Dixon.
Awesome.
Is my understanding. And I'm really excited to read it. It sounds fantastic. And then I got I Think I Love You by Ariane Desomer. That's probably not how you say it, but it's about these two teenage girls who are trying to win this competition, like a screenwriting competition, and they end up maybe kind of falling for each other. So It looks adorable. I'm very excited. It was very expensive Tuesday.
It was.
Yeah.
And I'm nervous for this Tuesday because I don't have much. But The Windsor Knot comes out, and that is a novel, we're going to say fiction, but I'm going to pretend it's true, where the queen solves a murder.
What?
Just
for fun. Nice.
Yes. So.
Well, I also had a very expensive week, so we're all in the same boat, I guess. So I bought Gilead by Marilyn Robinson,
nice.
Which I guess is a modern classic I've never read. And there's something about Maine in it. That's all I know. Mm-hmm. Julia, I think you've read this. Wolf Hall by Hilary Mantel.
I have tried to read that
Three
times.
Really?
Yes. Okay. I will. I feel like it's still on my shelf. Like I'm eventually going to read it, but I think you'll like it. It's just written so differently from every other historical fiction of that time period. I don't know that I care that much about Thomas Cromwell to read that many pages of him, but I want to read it because everyone says the sequels are just even better. So
okay.
I don't know. Well, yeah, see, I've tried so many times.
It's a monster. It's over 500 pages. It's almost
it starts off great and then kind of slows down for me. So I need to, maybe we should buddy read it and just like,
oh yeah, we could
cheer each other on. Yeah.
That'd be fun. Okay. All right. We'll plan to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I got Whispers of Shadow and Flame, which is book two of the Earthsinger Chronicles, the first of which I read back in December and I loved it. So the author's L. Penelope, and it's just fantasy sort of, it's not YA, it's like new adult fantasy. So I got that. I got this, Ray Bearer by Jordan Ifueko.
Awesome.
Okay. This book is like,
ooh,
like Black Panther.
Yeah. Pretty.
And like, look at that.
What does it look like naked?
Just wait.
Wow, that's gorgeous. That is a really beautiful book.
Right?
Why aren't people, are people Instagramming that? Because that's amazing.
It was big on BookTube and stuff like last summer.
Yeah. Oh, when it came out. Okay.
Yeah. I'm a little behind the eight ball, but I'm excited about that. I have more. My book of the month box came. I had got Honey Girl by Morgan Rogers, which I'm excited about. And The Lost Apothecary by Sarah Penner.
Also beautiful.
And then I also got Clara and the Sun. So those are mine.
In book of the month?
No, Clara and the Sun I got at the store. I only got two for book of the month.
I was like, was that a secret add-on? I didn't
know. Sorry. No, I stopped at the bookstore, my local indie store, after work on Tuesday and bought Clara and the Sun. No, I ordered it for curbside pickup because it was on sale for like $17.
Oh, wow.
So I bought it.
Cool.
Yep.
Well, I don't know. We have a lot to read.
I also just realized I forgot to mention two e-galleys I got. The Cost of Knowing by Brittany Morrow. She is the woman who wrote Slay.
Yeah.
And this is about someone who can kind of tell the future. And they end up seeing that their brother is going to die and has to figure out how to stop it. So that sounds amazing. It's out next month. And I got an e-galley of That Summer by Jennifer Weiner, which I'm going to be starting very, very soon because I'm very excited.
I'm so jealous.
It's on NetGalley.
I mean, I'm going to buy it either way, but I would love to. Yeah. That should be our book club pick in June.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because it was our first episode to read Big Summer.
Yeah. It'll be like an anniversary thing.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
It's about a year.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're all going to decompress after our book buying binge. And when we come back, we are talking to Hillary Leichter, who wrote a delightfully charming, whimsical, I loved it. Her book is called Temporary, and it's been getting a lot of great reviews and awards. And she's also a friend of a friend. So I'm really excited to talk to her. So stick around and we will be right back.
You know what you should read.
Okay, we are back and we are joined by Hillary Leichter, author of the book Temporary. Hi, Hillary. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. So glad to be here.
Yes, we're so glad to have you. So tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and about your book Temporary.
I am an absolute nobody who wrote a book during the pandemic. this is my first novel and it came out a year ago. And Temporary is the story of an unnamed temp who in the world of the book gets assigned totally normal jobs, but jobs that would be not so normal to us. So she works as a pirate and she works for an assassin and she's even hired as a mother. And it's totally autobiographical, basically.
Sure, who doesn't bounce from pirate job to...
I mean, in the year of our Lord, 2021. It's
At one point, she's a barnacle on a rock.
She is, yeah. So it's, you know, the novel is absurd and surreal, but it's all taken from those super real emotions of being kind of lost and undervalued and underpaid mm-hmm. that I'm sure most people can relate to.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah, the ways that she is compensated sometimes, and she's just like, "Yep, totally normal." Yeah. Just like I felt that.
Like, we can't pay you, but here's a, you know, a seashell. Right. That's not actually in the book. But it's so
funny. Even though it's like an absurdist take on work, there were, what I loved was those moments where something would happen. It's like, yeah, that totally happens at work. Like, there's one part where she's sick because she's seasick, but she had lied on her resume that she could totally handle the motion. And a man she works with says, "Are you pregnant?" And she says, "What?" He's like, "Well, if you're sick at work and you're a woman, then you're pregnant. I don't make the rules."
That line actually just came from like the fact that I got so tired of watching TV and movies where whenever a woman throws up at work, she's pregnant. I mean, there's like, yeah, I've thrown up at work before and not been pregnant.
So right.
Like, women do get sick when they're not like, you know, growing a child inside of them. It's possible to become nauseated for other reasons. So
not in TV world.
No, not in TV world.
I would like to figure out how to break into the assassin business. So if we could talk about that. I would say pirate, but I just read Float Plan and I do not think I would be good on a boat. So okay. I think I need to. So if we could talk after about breaking me into the assassin business,
I could give
that
you
would be very good. But seriously, what was the first idea for this story? Like the first kind of origin, I guess?
Yeah. So I originally wrote it as a short story for my graduate thesis. I want to say 2011, 2012. And then I published it in a journal called N+1. And I thought it was done because I published it. And so that's the end of the road for most stories. I was working on another book at the time, another novel that was just going nowhere and is now collecting dust in a very deep drawer in my dresser and no one will ever see it ever. And it was painful to write. It was unpleasant. I felt like I had written myself in a corner and just was not having fun. And my husband actually suggested that I go back and look at some of my short stories just to get joy from the process again. And I went back to temporary. And the interesting thing was that several years had passed since writing it. And I found that I was in exactly the same boat, no pirate pun intended. And that was upsetting to me, but also interesting. I felt differently about the things I was writing because it didn't feel as cute anymore to be running around the city between 10 different jobs. Whereas it felt sort of exciting when I was 24, 25, I felt tired. And so I thought, you know, I think there's something more here to talk about. And I just started playing with it again. And no one knew that I was working on it. There was no deadline. There was no one to impress. And I kind of didn't even have to impress myself. And so I just let myself have fun. And I do think that comes across in the book, that it was just me alone at my desk, or I didn't have a desk. So in bed, hunched over my laptop, sort of just playing and allowing myself that freedom that only comes when you're alone with your work and not really doing it for publication or for someone else. And after about a month, I had a finished draft. So it worked for me. And the book I'm working on now is not going to be finished in a month, but for that project, for whatever reason, that kind of breathless energy became the voice of the character and the voice of the world of the book.
Wow. It definitely shows how much fun you were having writing it, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I laughed out loud so many times.
Yeah, I don't want to say that if you're not having fun, you're not writing something good, because I think a lot of things are very difficult to write and don't come easily and need a lot of time and sort of marination between writing sessions. For whatever reason, that exuberant feeling of joining the workforce was the same voice of me just following wordplay and language and having fun by myself. And it kind of fit the tone of what I was trying to say. So it it was a lot of fun. And I was delighted that other people found it funny and not just me and my mom.
I feel like, and I don't write like at all, but I feel like it must be every debut novelist's dream to get all these really, really rave reviews from places like the New York Times and then get all these award nominations for their writing. And that really, that doesn't happen that often, but it really did for you. How has that been? And did it make the past year any better for you at all?
Oh yeah. I feel so lucky. I feel so grateful. And it was the only bright spot in a truly disastrous time, you know, like my book came out on March 3rd, 2020. And then the wow. book launch was supposed to be on March 13th and it, a Friday. And when yeah. I scheduled it, I was like, oh, Friday the 13th. That's so baller. Like, that's going to be great. Little did I know that Friday the 13th sometimes are bad luck. And that was the day that New York shut down.
Yeah.
And wow. So I did not have a book launch. And so in that moment, I was kind of like, oh, this is terrible. This is, you know, everything I've been working for basically my whole life, and it's just gonna disappear. Luckily, I think it happened, well, not luckily, but it happened to everyone at the same time. And so what ended up coming from it was this real camaraderie and sense of community. And you know, it was disappointing to not do events at first, but then it became this mess that we were all in together. And I got to meet mm-hmm. so many other debut novelists and commiserate over what a shit show it was.
Is there like a text thread of March 2020, people who had books come out in March 2020 yeah. to like support?
Yeah, I mean, like several text threads and email chains. And I mean, it was just, I thought there was going to be, I was worried about a blizzard, you know,
right.
What did I know? And so then, you know, obviously things became very clearly dire and I just felt lucky to have a book at all. My dream was to have a review in the New York Times. I never thought that that would happen, let alone from, I think, one of the best critics in the country working today. And I was just, when you write something, you kind of never believe that anyone else is going to read it. I can't explain why. It doesn't make sense because obviously you're sending it out to be published, but then people read it who you don't know. And it's, I still can't believe that you read it. It's this weird dissonance where I don't actually think that it exists outside of my head, but it does. And other people own it and come to it differently and add their own experiences to their reading of it. And so anyway, this is like the very long-winded answer to your really good question, but I just feel really lucky. And I don't know that there is another way to feel. Yeah. It's been a time. It's been a lot of fun.
It's definitely exciting. And yeah, I mean, I think we'll look back on publishing in general during this time and I don't know what we will learn ultimately from it, but it definitely seems like it will have changed the industry in some ways. And I think for the better. I think that, overall people are reading more because they have more time, which is great. So yeah, it is really exciting. To me, your writing was just so, it was so funny and I found it almost whimsical. And I don't know, something about it when I was reading your book, I kept thinking about Terry Pratchett and the way that he would write these worlds that were so, just absurd, but also a character would then say like a very modern turn of phrase, and that dichotomy I found in your book as well. And so I love his books. And as I was reading your book, I kept going back to that in my head and just being delighted in the same way. So I was just curious if what authors inspire you and who you read a lot.
That's a huge compliment. I haven't actually read a lot of Terry Pratchett, but still what I have read, that means a lot to me to hear. My influences, this is such an interesting question because I always feel like what I'm tempted to say doesn't make any sense with the type of work that I write. Like right now, I just love big 400 page realist novels, and that's not, and I wrote the opposite of that. But I think that's a good lesson in that for any kind of art, in that you should just consume everything and you're going to spit out something that is totally you no matter what. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coming to this book, I loved Ray Bradbury when I was a kid. I still do. I, for the reasons that you were mentioning about Terry Pratchett, I just loved the kind of matter of factness of the world building in mm-hmm. his stories and in his novels, and how there isn't really explanation. You're just dumped into this
right. new
circumstance and you have to figure out how to survive. And I've always loved that. And I really respond to surreal and fabulous writers like Donald Barthelme and Helen Oyeyemi and Kelly Link, in terms of contemporary writers.
I love Kelly Link. Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
A book that I read last year that just blew my mind. I mean, it wasn't something I read before writing Temporary, but was Friday Black. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read it, and it's interesting because it's a surreal kind of short story collection take on capitalism and race in America. And I just find it interesting reading these surreal takes on America right now, because minute by minute and inch by inch, they just become less and less surreal. And especially with my book, I think that when I wrote it, I thought it was so out there, and now it just feels like, yeah, that could happen. That's not that far-fetched. And that's
funny, yeah.
Yeah, it's scary, but it's interesting how close our imagination lives to reality. Even if we feel like we're so far out, we're actually just around the corner from things that are happening every day.
Right. I mean, how many times have we said, you can't make this stuff up, things that have happened the past year? One thing that comes up over and over in the book is there's nothing more personal than doing a job. Mm-hmm. And that struck me because I do feel like our work and what we do is very personal, but it also sometimes feels like it's our identifier, the way we identify and who we are, and almost subconsciously, it's the first thing you ask someone when you meet them. So it does almost feel like subconsciously we feel like we are our jobs or we are what we do. Is that something that you were thinking about when writing?
Oh, absolutely. And it meant something different last year when everyone was suddenly losing their jobs. And it's like, well, if you like what you do and you can't do it anymore, then who are you even? Crisis of identity. But yeah, and it was definitely on my mind. I think that feeling of being your job is not something that comes from us, though. I think it comes from the world telling us that our value is as producers and consumers. And that's where your worth comes from, how much you produce and how much you consume. And so this idea of what you do is tied to that. And it's really like saying, like, where are you in the assembly line of our society? And so I think that's part of it. But also, I really love what I do right now. And that's, I think I also really love some of the crappy jobs I've had, just because there's something really satisfying about doing a job and finishing it and getting paid for it. Mm-hmm. It can be nice. It can be a nice feeling. And I really wanted to put that feeling in the book of just no matter what you're doing, you can bring some kind of joy to it, maybe. Or the narrator brings a lot of joy to the work that she does, even if it's unpleasant or amoral. And I wanted to capture that sense that, like, you know, just people that I've met in my life who bring so much joy to their work, even if it's undervalued mm-hmm. and underpaid. I always admire that.
Definitely. And yeah, you're right. She, I think of her as temporary, even though I know that's not yeah. her actual name. She's an unnamed narrator, but she, yeah, definitely takes a lot of pride in doing a good job and is also seeking permanence. That's something that she really longs for. And she looks to her work to find that. But it was interesting to me that when it comes to her romantic relationships, she was more than happy to have these sort of a rotating door of boyfriends, right? She has one boyfriend for basically every need that she has. And she seems pretty content for that to be the status of her romantic life. So I just found it interesting, that dichotomy of she's looking for something really steady and permanent in work. But when it comes to boyfriends, like, let's have 22 boyfriends and just, yeah, why not? I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if she could have one, she would, but it's like part of her, the conditions of her reality mm-hmm. that she, that's part of the temporary life, you know, settling mm-hmm. down would be permanent. And so you can't do that.
Right.
But, you know, it was more a source of comedy for me than pathos, because I think at the time in my life when I wrote it, not to be super corny, but I had found love. And so I think you write into the things that you don't understand or are troubling you. And so I was troubled by my employment, not by my marriage. And so that's what I wanted to think about. And that was like the romance that was fascinating to me, as opposed to something that was just like giving me a lot of happiness and and felt nice. And so it became like an inverse of a kind of romantic comedy where the woman is searching for a partner to complete everything. And instead it's the job that's going to give her the stability that she's looking for.
Mm-hmm. Loved it.
Yeah.
Cornball.
Yeah. Yeah. This book is just so delightful. Delightful and strange in the best way.
Like me.
All the best people are.
Yeah, I agree. Though. I think so.
Can you tell us a little bit about the book you mentioned that you're working on now?
God, I wish I could. It's so not done. I mean, it's another, I think it's equally delightful and strange, but in a different right. way. And it's really important to me. This is a new thing that's important to me that I did not know was until I finished my first book. I think there's so much weight put on that first novel and like what you're going to say and what it's going to mean for you as an author and how that like, how it project like catapults you into the world. And it's like, all crap, you know, it doesn't, none of that means anything, but there's just so much tied to it. And then you get to write a second book and it's like, oh, there's none of those questions are gone. Mm-hmm. And so I really thought about what I wanted to do in terms of writing, like what I wanted my books to be. And I think it's really important to me to have every book be a new kind of thing. You know, and this one is, it's also strange, but it's a very different project. And I almost picture them all as these like little oddities in a cabinet in a museum somewhere that somehow go together, but also don't at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
it's another kind of odd project, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be on the lookout for that. Absolutely. So you mentioned a couple of books, you know, that you've been enjoying over the last year. Do you have any other like recommendations or, you know, books that you typically like to recommend to people or just any? Boss us around and tell us what to read. Anything goes.
Okay. Let's see. Well, there's so many good books coming out this year, and I've had a chance to read some of them. Night Bitch by Rachel Yoder comes out this summer, and it's amazing. It's about a woman who thinks she's turning into a dog. And it's like a mother, like a new mother, and so it's great. It's funny. Yeah. It's really, really a lot of fun. What else have I read recently that I loved? Well, I read Pachinko for the first time last year, which is not a new book, but I devoured that. I thought it was so incredible. Have you all read that? It was so incredible. Yeah, oh my God. I
loved it.
Kelly, you have to read Pachinko.
I want to.
I just wanted to start right back at the beginning again. Yeah. When I finished it, and I never feel that way. I'm like, oh, that was great. And then I'm
we were also talking earlier about books about times in history that we didn't learn really about. And that book for me was another one of those. Mm-hmm. Like, we were talking about The Four Winds, that Kristen Hannah's new book about the Dust Bowl and that time period. I'm like, I didn't know anything about that. And then Pachinko, about this time in Korean and Japanese history. I had no idea. So it was so interesting to read too.
Absolutely. I loved that. Let me think if I can give you one more, because things are better when they're in groups of three.
That's what we say in comedy too.
Yeah, it is.
The rule of three.
Well, I have to tell, this is like a sidebar, but before everything closed and the world stopped moving, I took musical comedy with Marty.
Oh,
Magnet, which is a theater in New York that teaches improv and or musical improv, I guess it's called. I don't even remember what it's. It feels like it was
musical improv. Yeah. So my friend Marty, who I did improv with in Baltimore before he and Amy moved to New York, so then he was doing musical improv at the Magnet Theater. So you took that. Oh, that's awesome.
And it was, yeah, so I'm familiar with the rule of three.
Yeah.
I'm well-versed. I literally just grabbed from the pile sitting next to me. And this is a book that I'm teaching this semester, and it came out in September. It's called That Time of Year by Marie Ndiaye. I think I'm pronouncing that right. She's a French writer, translated by Jordan Stump. It's really short. If you liked Temporary, it's not anything like Temporary, but it's like another short, strange book. And it's great. It's very surreal. It's about this man who is on vacation in the French countryside with his wife and his child, and they disappear. And it's the end of the vacation season in France, and they stay a day longer than they normally do. And so it goes from there, and he has to find them. It's great. It's great.
Nice.
Love it.
For those recommendations. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much, Hillary, for joining us today. It was so fun to talk to you, and I really loved Temporary. So everyone go out and check that book out. And where can people find you online? Are you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Hilsafina. That's Hilsafina. Never spelled it out on a podcast before. And then my website, hillarylechter.com.
Great.
Great.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
It was. Yeah.
So that's our show. Thanks again to Hillary Lechter for coming on. We all love Temporary. And we may be trying to figure out a way to break into her apartment to get that manuscript that's hidden. Don't worry about it. Don't even think about it. It's fine. If you need a distraction from our impending burglary, you can get your first book of the month club for $9.99 with the promo code What You Should Read, all one word.
Yes, and be sure to follow us on social media. We are WYSR_podcast on Instagram and on Twitter. You can email us at whatyoushouldreadpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Goodreads. I promise I'll update our Goodreads shelves soon. I've been behind on it, but be sure to check us out there and follow us. Be our Goodreads friend.
And now you know what you should read.
You're welcome.
You know what you should read.
It's time for What You Should Read, the podcast all about the titles you need. Join three book lovers and a guest as they cover all the best new titles to enjoy with your tea.